Welcome to another edition of the Big Fat Farm Show, where we talk about anything farm, fresh, and food related. My name is Sarah Severson. I'll be your host today. And today we have with us Dr. Bill Breitenbach, a local chiropractor here in Dolores, here to talk to us about pasteurized versus raw milk. Thanks for coming to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great. So let's hear a little bit about your background first that relates to nutrition and our conversation today.
Okay, well, I'm a chiropractor and have been for the last 44 years. And in chiropractic education, we study a lot about not only the body and how it works, disease and that sort of thing, but we also study, have an emphasis on health. And we know that one of the things that you need if you're going to be healthy is good food. And so nutrition is a big part of a chiropractor's education. So that's where I was primarily introduced to formal information about nutrition.
Huh, great. So let's get down to it. Raw versus pasteurized milk. What's the difference between those two types of substances or drinks?
Right. Well, raw milk is derived from cows that typically are fed on pastures of green grass and hay. Pasteurized milk is derived from cows that essentially live in barns. They don't see the outside. They're in stalls. And the milk that is derived from them is then pasteurized, which means that it's heated up to try to reduce the bacterial count in the milk. And so pasteurizing milk alters the milk and the nutritional quality in the milk to the point that it's a far different animal than raw milk. So in a nutshell, that's the difference.
Great. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. We're talking with Dr. Bill Breitenbach today about the difference between raw versus pasteurized milk. How long has this pasteurization process been going on? Have we always, forever, in the history of mankind, humankind, been drinking pasteurized milk?
No. As a matter of fact, maybe just a brief history of milk might be helpful. First of all, 95% of today's dairy farmers get their drink their milk raw, okay? Hmm. Even though the rest of everything they have gets sold to consortiums, which then it all gets mixed together and they pasteurize it. But milk is something that has been around as far back as we can go. 20,000 years ago, for example, men were hunters and gatherers. And they basically followed herds of animals and gathered their food as they went, ate some of the animals, and milked some of them. And don't ask me how.
They were milking way back then?
Yes. And don't ask me how to milk a reindeer or anything like that, because
that's going to be on my bucket list.
Yeah, exactly. But some of the oldest artifacts that we've found from prehistoric times have residues of milk in their broken pieces of jars and things of that nature. So, but eventually man settled down and domesticated animals and began cultivating plants. And that happened about the end of the Ice Age.
What's that time frame?
I think it's somewhere around 10,000 years ago.
Okay.
And I'm probably off on that, but in ballpark.
Yeah.
Throughout the history, though, of man, there's references both in the Old Testament in to milk. There's references from a lot of the ancient writings in India. The Romans and the Greeks and on through the Middle Ages, we have references to milk and the dependency that the civilizations had on that. In fact, milk has been referred to as one of the basic building blocks of civilization, because without it, people just didn't have the health and the strength and endurance to do what they were trying to do. The first cattle actually appeared in the New World In 1525, they were brought over by Spain, and they landed in Veracruz, Mexico. And they started some herds, and some of those cows got free. They broke out and got loose, and huge herds actually developed, and some of those went north. They called those Texas cattle, and then other ones went south and developed into massive herds, like tens of thousands, if not millions. And eventually, they started hunting them, and they did the same thing to them that we did to the bison in North America, which was that they shot them mainly for their hides, which were shipped back to Europe, and they left the carcasses to rot, which is not the greatest thing.
Unfortunate, yeah.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. At any rate, the American colonies on the East Coast began to start developing, and they had a problem with starvation, and they were having a real hard time getting their colonies to not only thrive, but even just to survive. And finally, they started shipping cattle with the groups of pilgrims and the ones who came over. And once they got the cows there, then things started to flourish and communities started to grow. And ultimately, what happened was that they would build towns, as a matter of fact, and churches and grain mills at certain distances. And it was based on how far a farmer could go and still have time to get back home to milk the cow. Because if you have a cow, it's a partnership between you and the cow.
That's right.
And you are dependent on the cow, and the cow's dependent on you. At any rate, it's that kind of a thing where big barns were built in order to grow hay, store it in the winter, and have that to feed to the cattle in the winter. 90% of our population, over 90%, were farmers. So people were really connected to the land. And
we're talking now about the 1500s, 1600s?
Actually, 1600s now for the colonies, okay. Into the 1700s. And then, so things started to work really well. But the main point is that the same milk that nurtured humanity for thousands of years was the same milk that the colonists used and all the other people that were beginning to thrive in the New World. It came from cows that were fed on grass and hay. But that all started to change in the late 1700s. And early 1800s, when New York City and other towns started to develop. So, for example, New York City in 1790 had a population of 33,000.
Mm-hmm.
In 1840, there was a population of 400,000. So, in just 50 years,
difference.
It just exploded, and we had. A lot of immigrants coming over from Europe where they were accustomed to drinking fresh milk, and there was a demand for milk and people wanted it. There was also a demand because a lot of women were not getting good nutrition, so they were having trouble breastfeeding their babies. And in addition, a lot of them were working in factories, so they couldn't breastfeed that way. So there was a real demand for milk, and they were having problems because You know, normally and prior to the big city movement, everybody had a milk cow. But when you condense people, obviously there's no room for everybody to have a milk cow.
That family milk cow went south.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of towns actually left pasture, common pasture for the cows. And in fact, Boston Common is a park in the center of Boston. That originally was a big cow pasture, and it was for that reason. At any rate, with no room for cows, people had to go outside the city to get their milk in New York City, for example, and they figured out and tried to figure out ways of getting the milk back into the city to the people. And coincidentally, in 1812, America went to war with Britain. And one of the things that happened initially is that the Brits cut off our whiskey supply. And, of course, Americans just couldn't stand for that. So they started making their own whiskey. And so the industrial liquor industry was actually started in 1814 in America.
And I feel like you're going to tell me how that's connected to the milk industry.
Exactly. Yeah. And then in turn to pasteurization.
So we're going to take a quick break here at the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. We'll be back with more with Dr. Bill Breitenbach. You'll find out the connection between whiskey and milk. Back soon. Back with more of the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. I'm Sarah Severson, your host, and today we have with us in the studio Dr. Bill Breitenbach. We're talking about the difference between raw versus pasteurized milk. And Dr. Breitenbach, we were just talking about a connection in history between whiskey and milk supply.
Yes, and again, it goes back to New York when they didn't have enough whiskey because of the War of 1812 with Britain, so we started distilleries. And those were grain distilleries that were started in all major cities, but especially in New York, they began doing that. And so they would distill various grains to extract the alcohol or ferment it, and they would take the starch and the alcohol from the grains. But what that did was it left a waste product of what was called distillery slop, and it was just a hot, soupy mix of boiled grains. And they figured out that they could feed it to cows, and that would end up allowing them to produce milk. So they actually produced more milk at a lower cost.
Boy, and thus that changed the course of history, didn't it?
It actually did, because the quality of the milk went way down, although the quantity went up. So from a business standpoint, with the quantity going up, they were making a lot of money.
And what's the qualitative difference between cows that are fed grain and not can't don't see the light of day versus cows that are grass-fed? Is there really that big of a difference?
There really is. And part of the difference has to do with the fact that cows are herbivores. They're designed to eat grasses. They're not really designed to eat grain. And when they do, it causes irritation to their entire digestive tract. Mm-hmm. So the lifespan of a normal milk cow would be anywhere from 12 to 15 years. In these, they called them slop or swill milk dairies. And the cow might live for maybe 10 months. And the conditions were, I mean, if you picture a feedlot today, those would be considered good conditions compared to the distillery dairies that they had in those days.
So did they continue with that grain feeding if they're losing cows every year?
They did. And they just factored that into the cost of production. A cow was, as is today, just considered a production unit. So they just factored that in, and they would just, you know, replace that cow. Wow. And many times they would see that the cow was almost dead, and they would finish milking it for that day, and then they would take it out and slaughter it and sell the meat. So they recovered some of the costs that way. Well, the milk, though, that was produced was so poor in nutrition that it was really good for nothing. I mean, you could drink it, but it had a bluish color. It was very thin. They had to...
That sounds like skim milk that you get at the grocery store
exactly.
today.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's additives that are put into skim milk today. They put additives in to make it look just a little bit better. For example, they would put in things like white flour. They would put in sugar. They put in... chalk. They even put in plaster of Paris to give it a texture and a color to make it look similar to milk.
So we're talking about, this is the 1800s,
This was
correct?
The early 1800s, uh-huh. yeah. And so what happened is they started feeding this to people and babies. Well, the mortality rate for babies increased exponentially. They started dying from all kinds of different things, especially diarrhea. And so there was a 50% mortality rate.
And was this milk at the time pasteurized?
No.
No. So this is raw milk with additives.
Exactly. So pasteurization came in. Louis Pasteur, our friend Louis Pasteur, developed pasteurization with the concept that bacteria cause disease. And so with that emphasis, they decided that that was what needed to happen to this milk. So they started basically boiling this milk before they sold it to people.
And this was still in the
1800s?
Yeah. Late 1800s,
uh-huh.
perhaps?
Mm-hmm. And doing that did reduce some of the sickness. However, it killed whatever nutritive value might have been in that milk. And as a result, babies were still dying. And it led to what was called at the time the milk problem. And the milk problem was a thing that turned into this great debate between those who wanted to have raw milk and those who wanted to have pasteurized milk.
Oh, so this discussion's been going on since the 1800s.
Exactly, yeah. And guess who won?
Guessing the pasteurized folks.
Yeah,
won.
They pretty much won the political debate and the legislative battles that ensued. So the milk problem actually really got started and got really defined in the early 1900s now. So we're skipping forward a little bit. The guy who was for raw milk, his name was Henry Coit. He was a medical doctor. And the guy who was for pasteurization was Nathan Strauss. And he was a businessman, philanthropist. And they both had their arguments, and it just, you know, went on and on. But at the time, people were still able to get raw milk. They called it certified raw milk because mm-hmm. they were inspected, the dairies were inspected, and that sort of thing, to the point where they were able to make sure it was clean. And then pasteurization happened also. So people really had a choice in those days.
Right.
And it just kept going. And in the 1930s, the commercial dairy interests, plus segments of the medical community, the public health agency officials, and various politicians and lobbyists began a campaign to really smear raw milk. And they actually put out everything from falsehoods to distorted data and used a lot of fear tactics to try to get people to stop drinking raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, through the legislature and all of that, they were able to pass laws to make it so that it's illegal to even have raw milk.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Big Fat Farm Show on KSJD. I'm Sarah Severson, your host. We're talking with Dr. Bill Breitenbach today about raw versus pasteurized milk. Dr. Breitenbach, let's fast forward to current day.
Yes.
So we've got the majority of the milk that is produced and consumed and bought through supermarkets is pasteurized. But
yes.
There are some movements around the country in Oregon, in Wisconsin of all places,
mm-hmm.
where you can purchase raw milk or raw milk products.
Right.
Let's talk about the benefits of drinking and consuming raw dairy products. What do people get from seeking those products out and consuming them?
Right. Well, they get a wide variety of nutrients, and they get pretty much everything that Mother Nature thinks that you should have in terms of a whole food product, as opposed to a specialized or laboratory analysis of what a scientist thinks that you should have nutritionally. Mm-hmm. So you get not only the known nutrients, you get the unknown nutrients, because science hasn't identified every single nutrient. At any rate, you get obviously you get real good fats and proteins, carbohydrates, you get vitamins, you get minerals, and you get probiotic bacteria, and those are the bacteria that actually help preserve the milk, and that you have in your digestive tract already. So those are all benefits of having raw whole milk.
And what are the benefits of drinking and consuming pasteurized dairy products? Are there benefits to those?
Well, I think there are some nutrients that get through and survive, but a lot of what you get is denatured or adulterated. The proteins, for example, are adulterated because of the heat, and the enzymes in the pasteurized milk are virtually all killed. And those enzymes are really important to help not only with digesting the milk and what's in the milk, but also in helping to preserve the other nutrients in the milk and help you absorb and assimilate them.
Great. So we've got to wrap it up for today. I didn't realize there's so much information available on raw versus pasteurized milk and the history of milk in general.
Yeah.
That was very enlightening. So if people want more information, Dr. Breitenbach, where's the place that they can get more information or contact you?
Yeah, they can call our office. Should I give the number?
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. It's obviously 970-882-2275.
Great.
And then there's a book that they can look for. It's called The Story of Milk, and it's by Ron Schmid, S-C-H-M-I-D.
Great. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Tune in 2 weeks for another edition of the Big Fat Farm Show. I'm Sarah Severson, your host, signing off saying, friend a farmer this week. Have a great day out there.